Welcome to another episode of the Pop Culture Roundtable, the podcast that's ready to kick some serious butt in 2021. In this episode, we talk about what's coming up for the show this year, Bridgerton, Cardo, and Soul. I'm Andrew Sale.
I'm Lauren Rubin.
I'm Patrick Hill.
So set your resolutions to stun and get ready to get crazy, because it's time for another episode.
I've never seen Star Trek.
We like to kick every episode off by going around the table, and this year we're doing things a little bit the same. So Lauren, why don't you tell everybody?
Why wouldn't you want to watch Chris Pine films? I mean, I'm clearly not talking about old Star Trek. I'm talking about the newer Star Trek. But
I have zero desire to watch any Star Trek films. And I like J.J. Abrams. But I just have no, I don't have space for it in my life.
Wouldn't that Beastie Boys,
get it?
Okay. But have you seen the new ones? Genuinely, have you?
I saw the first new one, and then I think I saw part of the second new one, but like.
Into Darkness or whatever it's called?
They do not capture my attention.
I'll say this. In Into Darkness, I believe it's that one. There's like,
yeah, you know, that's the one.
Space battle happens, and there's this Beastie Boys song that comes on. They freaking nailed that placement. It hits just as hard as like in the last Thor film when he's like doing the like slow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, to the Immigrant like, song. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like it hits just as hard as Immigrant Song does, but it's in Into Darkness.
I could get on board.
I would watch
for
the
that
entire
song.
Movie again. Just for that pairing of Galactic Space Battle and Beastie
Boys. I'll tell you
Boys.
What, I'll just watch that fun. Scene and appreciate the scene, because I just yeah. can't.
You have to be bored for 2 hours before it happens.
Oh, I or see.
It does, okay. yeah.
That's
it does
hard.
Really add some oomph to that punch. Like
that's the only way for it to work, is you have to have had 2 hours of being let down, because it lowers your bar.
Shadow proves the sunshine, exactly. You have to have the bad to appreciate the good.
All right. We're kicking 2021 off in a big way. Lauren, why don't you tell everybody what you've been doing?
Yeah. So last week was certainly not boring at all, because on top of like an attempted coup of our government, I found out my mom had COVID. And then I got to be in a Gallery 1988 show for the first time. So it was just a very big roller coaster of a week.
An eventful
roller coaster is a good way to talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What, was it more of like
a
flume ride?
I talked to you on the phone for a bit. And I feel like I got to experience all the highs and lows of the roller coaster, even in just like a 10-minute conversation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We spoke multiple times last week. And let's just say, not just for you, I think for all three of us, there were times where conversations had to be put on hold because each of us was dealing with our own shit at that individual time. So roller coaster is a good word. I would argue it's maybe more of a flume ride, because at the end you get wet, and it's like a flume ride in February in Michigan. Like you get wet and then you're like,
I was gonna say, not in a good way.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I think like jetpacks and roller skates has made like already like the perfect piece of art. So sum up 2021 so far, where it's like the dumpster fire inside of a dumpster fire. Like certainly feeling a little bit of that this week. But yeah, it was really exciting at the end of the week to have some good news. And it was just absolutely awesome to be in my first gallery show with Gallery 1988. I got to talk about a little bit on Instagram with you, Andrew, but just in case people missed that, because it was a live thing. It's open this Friday, and it was the 30 Years Later show, which was celebrating your favorite movies released in 1991. There was literally a million good choices for this. A lot of good movies came out that year.
There was literally a million. There were literally 1 million choices.
Pretty much. Like
after we're done with this podcast, we're going to discuss what the word literally means.
Yeah, it's probably closer to like 350, but sure, literally a million.
Approximately a million good movies to choose from. But I narrowed it down to Hook, and I had a lot of fun making a piece for that, because it is one of my all-time favorite movies. Once I had narrowed it down to that, I was like totally ready to go. And it was really fun to get to do this with some of our other M of One family members. Yeah. Shauna Lynn and Kate Carlton were also in the show. And Kate helped me so much throughout this like entire process. So, Kate, thank you. You're the best and I love you.
In what way?
So
like,
much.
Like, what do you mean? Like, what did she teach you or help you with?
She is just amazing at like being way ahead and like planning ahead. And she works about 500 times faster than I ever will in my whole life. And it's amazing. So she was like contacting printers and finding information about how much it would cost to do different types of printing and sharing all of that with me, listening to me complain about what a stupid, ambitious idea that I picked with so little time left to go. And all those other things, like figuring out how to mail things. Because we were like, do you have to bag and board each one? Do you think this? Do you think that? So it was just like really nice to like have somebody that was like there all the time to be like, what do you think? Because it was both of our first times doing it. So it was really nice to like have a buddy.
What year were you born in?
1987.
So I just checked 87. I'm also an 87. And yeah. I just checked top films of 1987. Full Metal Jacket's one of them, but you said you did Hook, so I wanted to let you know there is a film called The Lost Boys. Now, I'm not sure that it falls within side.
It's not.
The
vampire
the
one?
Cinematic universe of Peter Pan.
It's not vampires.
Let's say it does, though.
It's
Let's
not.
Say
it does. Super doesn't. It's a.
Are you talking about the like Kiefer Sutherland movie?
That's not important. Yes. Yes. It also has Corey Feldman, but... Yeah. I think you could probably pull off like a Peter Pan-esque The Lost Boys.
That would be fun. That was I'd made sure to include The Lost Boys in my piece for Hook. Pretty much everybody in the movie except for the kids is in it, I feel like.
Yeah.
But it was very exciting to get to do a show with them. I'm really excited to continue this the rest of this year. I need to get working on my next one so I'm not in the same situation this time where I'm rushing and pulling all-nighters to try and finish everything on time.
Yeah. Deadlines for shows like that can be like totally, what's the word I'm looking for? Paralyzing? Like where you're just like,
yeah.
I have so much to do. I don't even know where to start.
I honestly got stuck for a long time before I even got started because like I felt so much pressure to like really make something so amazing for this show because it's like I finally got into this gallery. I've wanted to do this for a long time. I'm aware of like the caliber of work that's there already. So I was like, okay, you need to get like level up for this. Like you cannot do your normal thing. So like I really, really tried hard to like push myself and like not back out of things that I usually kind of like cut corners on. Like I don't usually like to spend a lot of time on coloring, but I did not like not at all waste any time with that. Like I really like threw myself into that or like backgrounds and stuff. Like I'll occasionally get a little lazy with that, but I was like, no, this time everything is going to be the best it can be. And I'm really proud of what I made. And I got really, really great feedback from everybody. So I appreciate everybody who reached out and said something nice because it made my heart grow 3 sizes that day.
Well, the piece is freaking great. Sweet. Like it's really, really good.
Thank you. I feel like very proud of that one. Yeah. I tried very hard. And otherwise, I've just been hanging out, catching up on a lot of TV and stuff. I don't feel like I have anything super, super standout to talk about. I've been reading books. I've been like just kind of catching up in general because I was away from home for so long. And like holidays always kind of get the worst of me where you like just slack off a lot and you get into bad habits over that time. So like I'm really trying to like get refreshed in 21. I've been like working out and trying to eat better and do all the right things. So even though the world is crazy, I'm trying to get myself together.
Yeah, that's good.
That's pretty much been
way, way good.
What I've been up to. Patrick, what have you been up to?
You know, you mentioned that you had a COVID scare. I actually have had COVID the last 3 weeks. It's part of the reason we didn't record last week's episode. It just absolutely exhausting disease to have. I would recommend getting it via vaccine as opposed to negligence. I think that's the preferred method of receipt. In addition to getting it, I did manage to then give this gift to 9 other confirmed people. So oh. I think that does make me a super spreader.
He's
so
I'm a super
add that
spreader.
To my CV. I am officially, you know, on my adult profile, I would list myself as a super spreader before, but I meant it in a totally different way. Now on my health profile, I can also
human starfish
super spreader. Yeah, exactly. AKA super spreader. So anyway, I would
nickname.
I would just encourage everyone, if you've yet to contract the disease, don't. Just stay at home. You're going to get your vaccine in a couple months. I guarantee you don't want it. It was, I had a very, very mild case, and I still thought it was pretty brutal. So I'd feel bad for anybody that's gotten it worse. But anyway.
I'm so glad that you're better, because I was so worried for you.
I was worried for me too. Thanks.
You did not like seem like yourself at all.
No. I would still say I don't 100% feel like myself. It's hard to explain, but like, but I'm probably in the 90% there. So I'm almost.
Well, they said the tail will fall off. I think that's the biggest thing to me.
I didn't realize it was so common.
Yeah. Yeah.
But whatever. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, I did, you know, being stuck in a bed and not able to really do anything, I did get through a lot of TV and a lot. I mean, I watched the latest season of The Crown, which I'm not going to
talk
about.
Did you like it?
I did, but I thought it was perfectly enjoyable, but it's intense, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, and I'm having a little bit of a, it's fine. Some things I don't necessarily take enjoyment from watching. Like, I can recognize how well made they are, but yeah, I'm not my life isn't necessarily better because I saw it. And sure. So The Crown was fine, but I did make it through that. I watched all of Bridgerton, which I'm going to talk about later in this episode, and several like old seasons of The Challenge, because Mackenzie, that was like her thing, like the MTV show. She like loves it. I didn't know it still comes on. She still watches it. So we like mm-hmm. watched several seasons of that, and like some we tried.
Had you
that.
Seen that before?
No. I have not seen it. I didn't watch any like Road Rules. Challenge, like
Real World.
Like, I didn't watch any of that stuff. So
it used to be called the Real World Road Rules Challenge.
Yeah,
it was a real mumble mouth.
Weren't
TV
they like
shows?
Separate
yeah, that's a mouthful
things?
For
like
sure.
Real World and Road Rules were two separate things, and then they got combined, and then it was like The Challenge, and then yes. Whatever. Okay,
and now there's not like an actual reality show that centers around it. That's that they're pulling from, and now it's its own entity.
Yeah, The Challenge. Where and it's like
Survivor.
We're all paramilitary. Like, it's so serious. Whatever.
Oh, I thought The Challenge was like reality stars doing like Survivor-y type stuff.
It used to be. It used to be.
No. Okay. But it still is. But what I'm saying is, you used to, it would be like, we're putting up tiki torches, and now it's like we're wearing all black military gear, and we have drones and stuff. It's like,
oh my god,
everything's metal and concrete. It's like bizarre,
including
and
their outfits
this season. Yeah, maybe like, but I'm not going to watch it enough to find out if that's an every season thing or not. I will say what's interesting is like there are people that have been on that show for like the past 12 years. Like, they compete every year, which I just think it's interesting that that's their like job now. Anyway, yeah. Whatever. Good for them. So managed to consume a lot of content. I did watch that new Cooking with Leftovers show on Netflix, and it's absolutely garbage. The host of it is terrible. It's they're trying to do this whole like nailed it vibe with the host of like super energetic and super this, and like it's a weird mismatch. It's just a terrible show.
Is the idea then, people like cook with leftovers? I haven't even heard of this.
Yeah, exactly. It's imagine if you're doing like a Chopped style, like here's all your secret ingredients, but they're like given,
okay, that's
like,
what I was picturing.
Old food. I don't think it's actually old food, but it would be interesting if it's like,
like
you need to determine if this is even edible. Like, it would be cool if it's actual, like, garbage food.
Yeah, like, the eggs are rotten or something.
I think my biggest disappointment, so of all the content I've been consuming, there's also been podcasts as well, and I think my biggest disappointment has been Smartless. So, Andrew, you've recommended this. I've had other people in my life recommend this to me. I've had strangers that my wife doesn't know about recommend this to me, and I was ready to enjoy the show. It obviously has at least two hosts that I know and enjoy. It turns out I do recognize all three, just not initially. And the
you didn't
list
know who
of
Sean
guests
Hayes was?
No, I didn't. Oh. And the list, I mean, I do know, but at when I just seeing his name, no, I didn't realize who it was.
Okay.
But the list of guests is crazy. Like, it's an insane.
Yeah, they get good people.
So I decided to start listening. Now, whenever you start listening to a show, especially if you start at the beginning, there needs to be an assumption that it's going to morph. Like, it's not its final form, okay? So that's the reason, like, one of my favorite shows is Revisionist History. Well, Revisionist History episode, like, I swear, for the first six episodes, the intro changes six times. And, like, the flow of the show continues to change. Even when you get into, like, season three, like, the flow of the show is still kind of finding, like, its beats, you know? And so you can't really expect that one episode, especially early in a season run, is a good indication of what the show's ultimately going to be. So there does need to be some like leeway and understanding. That said, I listened to probably 12 episodes. I listened to more than 50% of the episodes that were available, including from the first one all the way to the most recent.
Okay.
And so I tried to really give it the old go. And where I was kind of left with it, a couple primary thoughts. The idea of smartless is supposed to be you have people that aren't smart getting smarter. So they're supposed to learn something. And they tell you that that's the kind of hook of the show is dumb people becoming less dumb. All right. It's hard for me to see where they're actually trying to learn something over the course of the episode. So I already don't feel like it fits the hook. The second thing is that the shows that do end up being captivating, in my opinion, are captivating because they're bringing on people that are already well-versed at creating content, and those people just do their own thing. So like when you have Conan on, Conan is going to be engaging because he knows how to engage a group of people by himself, right? When you have Dax Shepard on,
yeah, it's like his
Dax
job.
Has a lot of practice doing this through his own podcast, The Armchair Expert. So the episodes I found engaging, I felt like we're engaging because the guest was doing the heavy lifting and not because the hosts were bringing anything to it. And then on top of that, I just finally got the sense of I'm listening to rich people talk to rich people, and that can only be so interesting. Here's the straw that did bad things to the camel. It was the episode
that old adage.
It was the episode with Sarah Silverman. Okay, this is the one that got me because they know each other. They have a rapport that you could ask Sarah Silverman anything, and she's going to answer what you ask her. Okay, and you're talking to someone who was in Wreck-It Ralph. And they were in Wreck-It Ralph when you had James Gunn. Okay, so Sarah Silverman, if you look at her past, not known for being clean content or non-controversial. In fact, she has episodes of the Sarah Silverman Show. There's at least one episode where she wears blackface, which I know is a big thing. There's a couple, like, I think there's some age jokes in that episode that got people riled up. But like, she's known for intentionally provoking because her shtick, at least in my opinion, is that she comes across as this cute, prissy, perfect little girl who says all these horrible things. And it's that juxtaposition that is fascinating, okay? Right. Well, you have James Gunn, who had his tweets from 10 years ago or 12 years ago or whatever, led to him getting fired off of... Guardians. Fired by, I guess, Marvel or Disney and unable to continue on what was the movie?
Guardians.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Guardians. Gosh, blanking on Guardians. So you have James Gunn who gets fired and can't participate on Guardians while you have Sarah Silverman working on Wreck-It Ralph. All right?
Yeah.
And I so wanted them to get into that conversation of what someone's past and the controversy they create and them being allowed or not allowed to participate with a franchise, why she's allowed to and he wasn't. In that case, I would just love to hear her weigh in on that and hear them all weigh in on that because they're all within the industry. Additionally, you have someone that just by way of being a female is someone, and she herself touched on it very briefly, but you have someone that maybe isn't getting the opportunities or is being used as some sort of like sex symbol or some sort of object by people. And I would have loved to know her path in stand-up comedy versus maybe some of the guys that she was around and how they differed with the opportunities they were given or not given or the choices they had to make, etc. This would have all been fascinating to me. And that whole interview with Sarah Silverman basically ends up being a, hey, how are you? Oh, cool, you did those things? All right, talk to you later. It's one of their shortest interviews. Like, I think the whole episode's like 30 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And I was so, whereas you have other episodes that, like, the one with Ricky Gervais is like an hour 15.
Yeah.
And yeah. I that is the one that ultimately completely turned me off SmartList of, these people are just throwing these opportunities away. They're talking to these amazing people. They have a chance to get into these real topics and to push for these really insightful conversations. And out of the three of them, nobody takes it there. It feels like a waste of time to me. So
I have a thought, basically, because you threw this out a few minutes ago before we started recording. And I'm realizing a couple things now that I think are lending itself to, I think, what you're thinking. The premise of the show, like you said, is that it's people who are dumb getting smarter, right? Or less dumb. However, the hook of the show is that two of the hosts don't know who's coming. So they have zero prep time. It's all off the cuff thinking, right? And I think that could lend itself to being part of what you're seeing, in which case you are the sole responsibility of asking the hard hitting questions needs to be on the one host who is
in the know.
Right. And I will argue, Sean Hayes is really good at asking those questions. When he brings people on, when it's his guest, he's probably the Lauren of the group, where he has like all the notes in front of him.
He comes across as the most prepared for sure.
Right. You're probably Jason Bateman, and I would be Will Arnett in that scenario, right? Who comes in and throws in just random jokes to break up the seriousness or whatever. So, I think that's part of it. If you're looking for SmartList to be a podcast where you're learning a lot about like mixing it up or whatever, that's not the show for you. I was telling this to Patrick before we started. I don't listen to that show to learn a whole lot of things. I listen to that show for entertainment value because the three hosts interact with one another. I love their energy with one another on that show. The guests are fine, but I don't listen to it necessarily for the guests. I listen to it for the host. And so, yeah, I think it just does. You have to go into it with different expectations. If you're wanting to go into that and learn like the hard hitting questions, that's not what that show is for.
So that was probably my content disappointment from the past few weeks. But other than that, I am excited to talk about Bridgerton coming up in just a little bit. But that's kind of all I have to add right now. Andrew, this is like the least we've seen. It's so weird because I feel like we were in each other's lives so much. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea what you've done the past 2 weeks.
I know, because I don't live with you anymore.
Yeah, well.
I moved. I moved in the
past. But like we haven't been texting or anything. It's been like radio silence for a couple of weeks.
Y'all were busy.
I was getting busy living and you were getting busy dying, as they say.
Basically.
So I moved and am now just kind of finally set up and trying to get back into my normal rhythm. I've been drawing a lot. I have a
lot.
We talked about, a lot. only a little bit publicly, but the rest will become public here in the next few weeks, I guess. But been doing a lot of drawing and a lot of planning to do more drawing. Just watching some stuff. And so I will talk about one of my favorite things that I saw over this break, this extended break. But a couple of the things that I saw that I want to talk about real quick. I watched King of Staten Island. Which is that.
I saw that's on HBO now.
It's on HBO. So it's that Pete Davidson, Judd Apatow film. It also has Marissa Tomei and what's the guy's name? He's a comedian. I'm totally blanking on him. Bill Burr is in it.
Yeah.
And Steve
of Mandalorian
Buscemi.
Fame.
Yeah, yeah. Steve Buscemi is in the show as well, and I was impressed with that. I didn't realize that he was in it. So I actually really enjoyed it. It definitely plays as a long burn. It's a long burn film. You're not gonna watch it to get lots of quick like hit, jokey fun. It's quite serious. It takes the comedy portion of it very seriously. It's not a slapstick. It's not a whatever. It's deeply emotional. And there's obviously some lighthearted bits to it, but I would not classify it as a comedy. I would classify it more as like a
drama.
No. Well, yeah, drama. But I was going to say it's more of a biopic. It's a little bit more
it's supposed to be pretty close to his life, right?
Yeah.
His
experience. Yeah. Now they changed some of the details of it, but his dad really was a fireman. He really did die. He died in 9/11 though. They don't talk about 9/11 in this film.
Right. If I remember right, it's either in the artwork or the way that like the final scene plays off. Pete like looks towards the skyline, and where he's looking is where the towers would have stood, and that's supposed to be a tribute to the fact his father died in 9/11.
Interesting. Yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah. I didn't know that piece.
I have a quick question. Did Pete Davidson like write the movie, right, and then Judd Apatow directed it?
No, they wrote it together?
Not
100% sure.
Okay. I don't know the answer.
Judd Apatow got to know Pete Davidson and got to know his story, and I think it was probably a collaborative effort. But this is not. This is based on just. This is conjecture for me because I actually don't know. But I watched I would recommend it to people if you suffer from any sort of kind of mental illness, depression, anxiety. You know, if you are like he's ADD in real life and his character is ADD. There's just some really interesting dynamics that you learn about that. It's not a film for the whole family. Certainly, there's lots of drug use, lots of language, it's not the feel good movie of the year. But it definitely is. I think it's worth a watch. So, King of Staten Island, I would check it out. If you're in the mood to just
add that to my list,
chill and not get like too energized about a movie. And like I said, it's a slow burn, so you kind of want to let it play the course, right? Don't expect much of it too early on. The other thing is I started reading a book, speaking of Staten Island.
Ooh.
I started reading a book called A Very Punchable Face. It is a memoir and autobiography of Colin Jost. So head writer and co-anchor of The Weekend Update.
With Michael Che.
With Michael Che and Colin Jost. So it's his book that just came out. So it's called a very punchable face because he has been told over the years that he has a very punchable face. He acknowledges right at the very beginning of the book that he knows what he looks like. He looks like a very white bread, upper middle class American
country
boy
club type dude.
Yeah, exactly. Like grew up on a yacht. Blah 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 blah. He knows that that's what he looks like. He is from Staten Island, and he talks at the beginning of the book about how he's from Staten Island and how Staten Island has like he has become like the golden boy of Staten Island, where Pete Davidson has gotten death threats. Like Staten Island hates that Pete Davidson claims him as their home, or claims them as his home. So it's really interesting dynamic. So reading this book and then seeing that King of Staten Island was on HBO, I had to watch it. I'm only a couple chapters into A Very Punchable Face, but Colin Jost, his humor is so it's actually pretty unique. It's very dry in some of its delivery, and if you don't know, I'm listening to the audiobook, the Audible version, and so he's reading it. It's actually him reading his book, and if you don't know that he's joking about things, you could walk away from it thinking like, oh wow, he's done X, Y, and Z, because he delivers things with such a level of dryness. Lauren, you might not ever want to listen to the book, because if you listen to the book, you're going to believe everything that he says, but 90% of it is said in like is sarcasm.
We talked about the fact that Lauren, even after being on the podcast for over a year, is still like the most gullible person that I know.
Yeah. Yeah. She definitely.
You would think that like you would break someone of that habit through repetition of lying to them.
Yeah. The problem is she keeps giving us the benefit of the doubt.
She's so trusting. Yeah.
I trust you guys. And it's sometimes it's hard because you don't necessarily like say lies that are like so crazy, it's like very believable. So I'm like, okay.
That's the key to a good lie. You say it's something that's just believable enough.
You are the equivalent of a golden retriever.
Yes.
Oh, you're yeah.
Just always there with your tail wagging.
Always there. So anyway,
I'll take that.
A very punchable face. It's a great book so far. I'm really looking forward to finishing it. I did learn something interesting about him. He suffers from like severe anxiety. Like he doesn't like public speaking. He doesn't like being in front of people doing public speaking, but he loves to write. Writing allows him to, if he's communicating something he's written, it's a lot easier for him because it's like an expression of something that's inward and not as public. But getting up and like talking in front of people, it gives him like paralyzing anxiety, which I thought is a really interesting considering he's on one of the most visible TV shows.
Like popular TV shows.
Well, it reminds me of, that part reminds me of Bill Hader.
Yeah.
Who notoriously, I mean, he said basically he would want to or would basically throw up every time before he would go out on SNL because he got such anxiety about it.
I know.
I didn't know that. That's crazy. It makes me like feel better about my own stage fright and stuff. Like maybe I can get over it.
Yeah. I mean, if these guys.
Well, the difference is they're funny. So, and talent.
the core difference is the talent. Also, I would argue the core difference is them getting paid tens of thousands of dollars to do it.
Yeah, that would certainly motivate me quite a lot.
It's a lot easier to get over something if someone's willing to hand you a check for tens of thousands of dollars.
At least afford anxiety medication or weed or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A therapist.
So anyway, that's what I've done. I've watched a couple of more things, but I'm going to save them for future episodes because I want to give a little bit more insight to a couple things. But King of Staten Island and a very punchable face. The love and golden boy of Staten Island and the underbelly scourge wish they could rid him of their hometown name of Staten Island. So there you go. That's what I learned about. Okay. Before we go into our master categories, we put a word out last week. If you saw on Instagram, and we did an Instagram survey where we wanted to know what you thought. And we had some very specific questions in way of things that you've loved about the show, things that you'd like to see come back, ways in which you consume content, all these various different things. We have since then gotten your responses and we have met together as a team and we have some, it's helping us shape what we're going to do with the show moving forward. So we're being very intentional, very active with the results that we got. If you did take time to give us your thoughts and your feedback, thank you. You can keep it coming because we are always iterating and always changing things, but we do have
some plans. And I do want to say we have them, like the questions still up in our stories and the suggestion box post. So if you guys want to keep giving us suggestions, we want to hear them. So don't feel like it was only limited to this week and now it's done. Like keep them coming. We'll leave it in our stories for a while.
Keep them coming. But we do want to let you know we do have some plans. We do have some ideas moving into 2021 that we want to see happen. And so Patrick, why don't I just hand it over to you and you can start us off and then we can just dialogue about it.
Sure. I think the biggest one, the most immediately noticeable, not the biggest one, most immediately noticeable is that the format of this show is going to change slightly. We're going to be bringing back tokens, although there's going to be a few more than last time and we are adding a modifier. So in the past, we've used tokens to determine the categories we talk about. Now we're going to be using a D20 along with a D4 modifier to determine the topics we're talking about, which is to say there are more topics and there's a little bit of a...
Could you say we've gotten geekier since we last did this?
A little bit geekier.
We have a D20 with a D4 modifier. That is about as geeky as you can get, I think.
He's really getting the good practice in our D&D sessions.
Exactly. That's right. So that's how we'll determine topics. So in the future with this show, we'll have an Around the Table talking about what's new and noteworthy with us. But for our master category, those will have been selected the week before. They're up to the roll of the dice, and that will determine what we talk about. If we all roll the same thing, you know, like 3 nat 20s, then we're also going to have some bonus things for you guys, but we'll talk about those as we get there.
Yes.
But the biggest thing is our master categories are coming back, and they're going to
come back. We're re-gamifying things.
We're regamifying our master categories.
We had taken that out for the last a little over year. We had taken out the gamification point, and And we're bringing it back, and we're doing it in a really fun. I'm really excited to see how this goes
because yeah, it's going
to
make us gonna be fun.
Really focused.
Right. And so the master categories now are going to be us trying to bring something the other two don't know about, with the goal of teaching them something new within the category that, again, the dice selected for us. So that's the biggest thing that's going to happen to this show. All right. But it's going to stay a podcast to consume it. You consume it the places you already consume it, iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify, and wherever else. Okay. The next thing we're doing is we're adding a live streamed show. This will be video live stream on YouTube that is going to have a community interaction. You're going to be able to, if you're someone that draws or someone that illustrates or someone that whatever, you're going to be able to participate with the show when that happens. And this is going to be happening monthly, and it's going to have prompts during the month. So that's all the details I'm going to give now. But that's going to be very exciting. But that's content that's going to start very, very shortly. So it's going to start in the first part of this year.
Yep.
And you'll be able to participate along with that and all that good stuff. On top of that, we can't just, I mean, we have lives. We have things that we do. We run businesses and all that sort of stuff. So we can't just start creating much more content. It means we're going to start bringing in new content creators under the MF1 Network umbrella, which means that, yes, you've got our voices and faces, but you're going to start getting new voices and faces as well, starting with that YouTube stream show and then branching out in the future. Along those lines, our goal is not to stop there. Our goal is in 2021, over the course of this year, that by the end of this, we have, in addition to the show, which is weekly, we have at least one other piece of content every other week of the year. So we want to be giving you two new pieces of content throughout the year. The goal is by the end of this year that that's happening. It's going to mean, again, involving other content creators and other types of content. And that brings us to this call to action, Andrew.
So, yeah, we want to hear from you guys. If you are either a budding content creator, you have this idea for this thing that you want to do and you don't, you don't exactly have a platform for it. You don't exactly know where to go with it, but you know that it's something that that really interests you and really interests a group of people. We want to hear about it. We want to know what that idea is and if it fits in with what we're trying to do. We want to give you a platform. We want you to join us in our venture and become part of the M of One Network family. And so we're going to have a form that's on our website for you to go and fill out to let us know what it is you're doing, what your idea is. And that's if you're just a budding content creator. Now, you might already have a platform. You might already have an audience of people, but you want to combine efforts and join the fray. We're looking at you too. If you are already creating content and you already have people listening to you and engaging with you and you already have a community, but you want to expand your community into ours and ours into yours and become more of a symbiotic relationship, then we want to hear from you too. So whatever that may be, if you have a new idea or an existing idea and you think it works with what we're trying to do as a network, we want to hear from you. So there'll be a form on our website. Just go to mof1.network and let us know, and we will get back with you. And we already have some ideas as to some things that we'd like to see. We actually already have some content creators that we know of that we're hoping to hear from. And if we don't hear from them, we might reach out to them. But we do have ideas for where this show or where this network can go. And it's so much bigger than this show. We really want to make this a community effort. This show is ultimately about community, and we want to bring in the community to be a part of what we're doing in 2021.
We ultimately want people's life to be enriched because they participate in the community and they participate with the network. I mean, that's the reality. And that enrichment could be because it's something is funny and it's just a break from what's going on in life, or it could be because you learn something and feel like you're a better artist or somebody that's challenging what you're doing. Could be any number of reasons, but we want to make sure that you are a better person because you participate in the community, and we want to make sure that we're growing this network to bring more to you. And we're at a point where we cannot grow it anymore with just the three of us. we have to involve other people, and we want to involve other people. Yeah. So that's where we're at. So very excited for 2021. That's
We should have started with this piece. We're re-engaging what this show is about. And if you've been with us from the beginning, you know this, but we haven't reiterated it in a long time. And it's important for us to kind of, we took things back to the roots of what why we started this. Our show really consists of three things. First and foremost, we are to entertain. It's an entertainment podcast. We want to make you laugh. We want to make you smile. We want you to engage in the conversation in one way, shape, or another. Entertainment. And then the next one is to inform. If you walk away every once in a while learning about a new game, a new artist, a new whatever it may be, a new film, a new TV show, then we'd like to say that that's like the frosting on the cake. And then the final one is to inspire. If you walk away from this wanting to do something, to make something, to create something, to put something out into the world, then that's like the cherry on top of that. So entertain, inform, and inspire. We're re-engaging those pillars. We are re-engaging that philosophy going into 2021. And so, like Patrick was saying, we want the community to help shape that and make it a more fully fledged community effort, as opposed to just the three of us who only have so much time and so much energy to put into it.
No, there's so many talented people. Why would we do it by ourselves?
I know.
I think a big thing about 2020 is realizing how much like we miss connecting with other people. So we want to like grow the network and be more connected with everybody and just like get a chance to interact with y'all more.
Yeah. And that's really what it's about. Okay. Any other things, Patrick?
No, let's take it to Master Categories.
Quick, quick, quick. Every week we talk about things in the pop culture sphere, and we're just going to keep that train rolling for at least the rest of our lives.
However short they may be.
And that's a promise. That is a promise you can take to the bank. So, Lauren, I believe you've got a video game you want to tell us about.
Over the break, I tried out a new video game that I found on the Switch, like Nintendo store, and it is called Karto. And the whole idea behind this game is you are a little cartographer, and your superpower that like makes the game change is that you can change the map and manipulate it to however you want. So it kind of, you get little squares, and they're your kind of pieces of the map, and you have to move them around or turn them and make different like combinations of the map pieces in order to solve all the different puzzles. It's really fun and like very, very different. And like, you can even be standing on one part of the map, move that over to the other side, and then like get to all new things and things like that. So like, sometimes you have to find new pieces of the map and create a lake in order to like help out with different puzzles, or you have to rearrange the different rooms inside of a library so that you can have access to different floors and stuff. It's really, really different as far as games go. I've never played with something where you can like manipulate the map, so I was really intrigued by this game.
Yeah.
And it is really fun. The puzzles are decently hard. It is like not easy. So like if you're playing with little kids, it might be a little bit too hard for them if you're not helping them. But it's like very enjoyable. The game is really, really cute. If you look it up, it kind of looks like a children's book that would all be drawn with pastels. And it's very sweet. Like all the characters are really cute. And the music is very nice. The setting is really cool. I really enjoy the like artwork for the game, which is like why I initially checked it out. And it's just really, really enjoyable. Like it's a very chill game. There's no like super high stakes. Like if you get stuck, you just keep trying until you kind of figure out the puzzle. But I've been really enjoying it. It's a good like brain teaser type thing, because like there's been a few of them where I got like really stuck for a while and had to like come back after. I was like, oh, I just figured it out. Like,
yep.
But I totally recommend this game. It's really cheap. It's only like $15 in the Nintendo store. If you just sat down and did nothing but play this, you might beat it in a day. But I spent about a week playing it, so I feel like I definitely got my money's worth. I just played like a few chapters each time I sat down, and I just really like this game. It's a lot of fun.
Okay. I have not ever heard of this game. Looking at it, it looks unique. It looks like a top down, like portions of it look like a top down, like original Zelda style game, but almost like concept art sketching on top of it is what it looks like to me.
Yeah, it looks very like hand-drawn and kind of sketchy and loose. Like, that's why I said it looks like with pastels or something, because it looks like even like where you could see people like smudge their finger on the like trees and stuff. Yeah. And it's a really enjoyable game. The art style is like really nice to like look at. And it's, I don't see games usually go like with such a like painterly or like natural looking style to like, you know, like real artwork. And it's just kind of very different, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it looks cool. I don't know if I have the time commitment to put into solving puzzles like that, but it's definitely a game that I would totally watch like maybe some videos of. I don't know that I would actually buy it and play it, but it looks really nice.
Sure. It's kind of broken up into little chapters that aren't very long. So like if you just want to sit down and play for like 30 minutes, you're probably good, you know? But if you just aren't feeling like a longer game, maybe that's not the move for you. But I really enjoyed it, especially because it was not expensive at all. And I just kind of downloaded it on a whim looking for a different game to play. And I very much enjoyed it.
Okay. Awesome. Who are you tossing it to?
I'll throw it to you, Andrew.
Okay, cool. So I got to watch... I took the time over the break to watch Pixar's newest film, Soul. And Soul is a beautiful movie. Came out on Christmas Day on Disney Plus. It is a movie that is directed by Pete Docter and co-directed by Ken Powers. And it's the story of the very first African-American protagonist that Pixar has produced. And it's the story of this guy who is a jazz musician. He's a teacher, like he's a teacher at a middle school, but he wants to be a full-time jazz musician. And he finally gets an opportunity to catch a break and play with this band, this well-known singer. And
like one of his heroes.
Yeah, one of his heroes. Like this is a woman who's very well known, and she's playing at this gig. She's playing this bar. And he gets the opportunity to play the gig. In the excitement of doing that, he falls into a manhole and dies. I'm not saying much that the story doesn't already tell you in the trailer. He dies. The story now then is him trying to get back to his body in an effort to fulfill his purpose. And his purpose, he believes, is to play jazz music and to be a jazz musician. And so he, in order to do that, he gets paired with, as a mentor, he gets paired with 22, which is a soul that has never been granted. It's a pre-soul. So like it's a, instead of going up,
like
he goes down into like the beginning, like before people are born. These are the souls that get allocated to bodies. Let me ask this question real quick. Have either one of you watched this movie yet?
Not yet.
Twice, actually.
Really okay, to. So you've seen it, and
The Great Before is what they great call before. It in the movie.
Yeah, and so this is where babies get their personalities, and 22 is a soul that's been around for hundreds and hundreds of years because no one can quite help her. Voiced by Tina Fey, by the way. The main character is voiced by Jamie Foxx, and it's fantastic. But his name is Joe Gardner, by the way, the main character. So Joe Gardner is trying to help 22 find her purpose so that she can become a human. In the meantime, he is trying to gain access back to his body in the real world. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to kind of leave it at that because it's still very new. People have an opportunity to watch it. I don't want to give any spoilers, and there's a lot of nuance and things going on to it. What I do want to talk about, though, is... The style of this movie, both in music and in art style and like the visual style. This is a very unique film.
I totally agree.
They use like Art Deco style abstract art because of course jazz is the musical version of abstract paintings, right? Like it's
kind of like cubist almost. It's very abstract. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very abstract. It's taking notes and pairing them with other notes that don't typically go together. So it is very much like the musical version of abstract art. Well, they use abstract art, visual abstract art, in a lot of their characterizations when you're in the Great Beyond and when you're in that kind of soul land. And it is very, very unique. I've not seen anything like this before. In fact, the jumping back and forth between the soul land and then the real world, the renderings that they've gotten to these days with
oh my gosh, they're so incredible.
It feels like you're actually watching real world things. It's like the first time since I watched the very first Toy Story, and I swore that they were cutting back and forth between actual Green Army Men toys like that were being filmed and then like the characters that were moving. I swore that it was like, oh, these are just Green Army Men now on a video camera.
Mm-hmm.
It was like that. The sets, the things, this takes place in New York City, and the sets are phenomenal. Like, I don't know how. Is it New York City? I said that and now I instantly feel like
it's not. It is. And I think they were smart to wait till now to do New York, which is such a place that, like, at least in the United States, like, so many people have at least visited or have an impression of. And it, like, really feels like New York. Like, it's loud like that. It almost feels like dirty and dusty sometimes. Like, it really captures New York in a really different way that, like, I have not really seen in animation. Like achieve, it's really impressive.
Yes, the visuals are stunning. This is probably the most beautiful film that Pixar has put out to date, in my opinion. When you consider the fact that you're living in two worlds, and both worlds are like dramatically different from one another, and they're both executed with such a level of detail and execution that it's like. It's just great. Like, I do think that they obviously produce really great films, but I think this is the first time that they've really had to create two completely different worlds within the same movie and have them be so completely opposite of one another, but blend so well together. Because there's moments where some of the soul characters make their way into the real world, and how they interact with the real world is... so
I love that,
creative and so fun and so cool. Our friend Josh Holtzclaw got to work on this film, and so it's been really cool. If you go over to what's his thing, Patrick,
Big, I cannot tell you, it was Big Friend Co, but it changed. I think it's
just Holtzclaw. Let me just look real quick.
If you look up Big Friend Co, you get a big fat nothing on Instagram now. So
I think it's just Holtzclaw, if I'm not mistaken. Well, there will be a link to it in the show notes either way.
It is just Josh_Holtzclaw.
Okay. So you can go onto his Instagram page and look at some of the like concept art, and then not even concept art. Like, he actually is a graphic designer for Pixar. And so he designed a lot of like the scenic elements. Down to like the boxing posters that are inside the barbershop, the labels on lots of the different products. He even designed the tattoos on the barber's arms. Like, he's a
Navy guy. That guy was the best.
He's fantastic. He's voiced, that's the guy that's voiced by, is he the one who's voiced by Questlove? I think it is.
Yeah, I think it is. Yes.
No. Questlove is the drummer. No, Questlove is the drummer from the band.
Questlove is the drummer,
which makes sense.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But the barber, all of his artwork, you get to see like all the artwork laid out, like flayed out as like a character design, and then he shows it like finished on the actual character. It's really, really cool. Josh actually got to do so. The name of the jazz club is pretty prevalent in the movie, and Josh got to do the branding for all of that stuff, and he shows his
that's awesome.
Concept drawings and all the different iterations that it went through. So check out Josh's page. Give him a follow. He's an awesome follow. He's a fantastic dude too. Super
he's
nice
great.
Guy.
And genuinely, he took us to Pixar, so he's a great dude. I want to point out Richard Ayoade plays the Soul Sorter, and Richard Ayoade is one of my favorite people. He's just
really
so great.
Yeah.
Oh, I
every single one of the like Jerry's and Terry had great voice acting choices, and I love that Rachel House got to be in a Pixar movie. That makes me so happy.
Yeah,
and she's.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was going to say she's like the crabby lady that's in Thor Ragnarok that like works with the collector.
Yeah.
Or no, it's the Grandmaster. Sorry.
Yeah.
Andrew,
I love that actress.
Do you know who John Batiste is?
Yeah. He's a musician.
Okay. So he is who did all the jazz music for Soul. He's the And then
and we should mention the music is
Trent
really, really good.
Yes, right. So then Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, Trent Reznor, who's of Nine Inch Nails, they're who scored everything else. And in fact, in one of the scenes, I've just seen the screenshot from it. The main character is walking in front of a hardware store and they have a sale on Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah,
but it's because because Trent Reznor did him and Atticus Ross scored the music. And then John Batiste did all the jazz music from the film. He is who leads the house band for the Colbert Report, I believe.
Oh.
At least he did, but I think he still does. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's so cool.
Yeah, the movie is on all levels. It pings on all levels. Now I know there's some discussion and some, I don't want to say controversy, that feels a little bit too heavy of a word, but there is some
criticism, let's
criticism,
say.
Yeah, and some disagreement on whether or not the story is a couple of things. One, like theologically sound, right? There's some theological implications of it. And then there's also some critique and some criticism on whether or not this is really a movie for kids, because
it's pretty deep.
It is a deep movie. It is not surface level. There is a lot. Mm-mm. And I would even argue there's not a lot of surface level like jokes in the movie. There's some slapsticky kind of stuff.
It's physical comedy, but not really.
Right. Like, it's few and far between. This movie makes you think about things. This movie makes you feel a lot of things. It's reminiscent in a lot of ways of what's the movie about emotions? I'm totally blanking on the
Inside Out.
Inside Out, yeah. It's a lot of ways. It's pulling like the deepest parts of Inside Out and making a whole movie on that. That's what I feel anyway. Now there's some twists and turns, and there's some things that you would expect in like a normal plot in like a normal plot of a film, and then there's some things that you wouldn't expect, and they do a lot of things totally new, and they approach things in a totally different way and kind of unapologetically go after a story that's not ever been told in this way before. And in that way, I'm very impressed with what Pixar did. I'm very impressed. I think it's a risky movie, honestly. In my opinion, I think it's a risk that paid off. I think it's fantastic. I can't wait to see this world evolve, and even from a visual perspective, I can't wait to see what products they come out with. Like, I would love some of these soul characters as toys. How they would do them, I don't even know, because they're kind of wispy. I'd love to see how they end up doing those things. But all in all, I would say I give this movie probably a 9 out of 10 on my spectrum. I can't wait to watch it again. I want to draw. I drew Joe Gardner as his soul character. Mm-hmm. And he was fun. I want to draw a bunch more because I think it's just phenomenal.
Yeah, totally. I really like this movie. I would put it like very high on my list of 20 movies from 2020. I really liked it. I understand a lot of the criticisms with it. And I think another one that I've heard a lot is some of the voice casting, but it's kind of a spoiler to say why, so I'll leave that out. But
right,
I just feel like it's worth acknowledging. But I still really liked it. What this movie had to say is like something that I think about a lot. And so I found a lot of things about this movie very touching and very poignant to things that I've been dealing with. So I really like this movie. Like, I've already watched it twice. It's really cool. And like you said, like everything that's in the like afterlife is so uniquely animated. I was thinking it would be so similar to Inside Out, so initially I wasn't as excited about it. But once you see the whole picture, I was like floored how cool it is. It's so interesting. Like just to look at, like that alone. It also has great music, and it's got all these other things that we're talking about that just make it really great.
I think it hits on all the spectrums. Patrick, I'm looking forward to you seeing it and letting me know what you think. Lauren, what would you rate it out of 10?
I'd probably go 9 out of 10 as well, yeah. Okay. I think, I wouldn't say it's like my favorite Pixar movie, but liked so many things about this movie. Like, I don't really have a lot of negative things to say about it at all.
No, I
agree. Is it as good as Coco?
I think it's better than Coco.
Ooh, that it might tie.
I think
I've really liked Coco.
I like
that
Coco.
That might be my bar because
the music in Coco is more fun, but like the music in this is more like technically impressive. It just yeah. they're so different. It's hard to like so compare different. Them because
they both deal with yeah. the afterlife. They both deal with the afterlife. Yeah. So that's one thing.
They
but
both have they like do... the fluorescent colors at different parts, and they have a lot of mm-hmm. music.
And that's honestly what I was thinking.
Yeah,
about.
And music. Yeah.
When I was reviewing during this talk about the scenic stuff and the most visually like impressive, I was actually in my head thinking the last most impressive prior to this would have been Coco because of what they did with all of like
oh my gosh yeah.
The, Dia de los Muertos with all the colors and the fiesta and all that stuff in the afterlife and all that was so rich and so vibrant.
Mm-hmm.
This is like that, but then also transplant in the realism of New York City and how they executed the rendering for that. And I think this notches it up just above. And I would have put like Coco at like an 8 or an 8.5. This movie just barely edges it out in my opinion. The music
I think
is more singable and more approachable in Coco than this one, but this one is just mm-hmm. so uniquely different and beautiful. I think it just barely edges it out in my opinion.
So, I'd rank them very close to each other.
Yeah,
I think Coco okay. just makes me cry every time I see the ending. So I'm like, it's so touching. I yeah. can't like say it's bad.
All right, Patrick, take us home.
All right, Bridgerton. I promise I'll talk about this now. Bridgerton. Is the television love child of Emma and Riverdale.
visually, I love that.
Visually and from a costume design and things like that, you get a bit of an Emma vibe. And you know how Emma had little modern touches? Well, Bridgerton does things like that as well. Whenever you hear music, or at least most of the times I could tell what it was, even though it's played by people with like, you know, violins and cellos and like all these like whatever, it's like these orchestrated
they're
bits.
All created by minstrels.
Yeah, they're all modern songs. So like they'll be playing
cool.
like a Taylor Swift song, so all these people yeah. will be in their ball and their yeah. big clothes or whatever, and then it'll be like Billie Eilish is playing. So anyway, so it's got these that's modern cool. touches. What makes me think so much of Riverdale is a bit of how the story is told. In Riverdale you have this character called Jughead, who is he writes like a column or his notebook or whatever, you know, I think it ends up being like a news column. And so he kind of serves as the narrator for the story, because ultimately the episode is it's his narrated column that you're seeing the visuals to. Well, similarly in Bridgerton, you have the secret writer that writes all the town gossip, Lady Whistledown. And so what you're hearing, the episode, is the gossip column from that week. That's basically what it is. And so you're getting that narration going on. So that's the
maybe
reason.
A little bit Sex in the City as well.
That yeah. season has a bit of those back and forth vibes. I would really compare it to a season one Riverdale to Emma. Now, there is also an underground fighting ring as well, which we talked about, Lauren, about how they did that in like season 3 or
amazing.
Season 4 of Riverdale. So there's some yeah. other more direct comparisons as well, but I really got that sense with it. The other thing that's interesting is the first 4 episodes have a kind of specific tone to them, and it's very much of like you're trying to learn all the names and all the ranks and what the social hierarchy is and all that kind of stuff. Once you get to episode 5, you can kind of forget about that, because then it's just softcore pornography yeah. for the next couple of episodes.
Yep.
So you're able to kind of press pause on the story for a little bit. And I will say that like it's more than like what you're used to at home. Like, I don't mean what you're...
Like HBO level, you mean? Or like...
That's what
Cause
I'm
like, because like Riverdale has a lot of sex scenes, you know, but they're pretty mild.
No, you for sure see like some boobs and some butt and some gooch and some stuff like that. I don't know that that the main guy, Reggae Jean, whatever his name is. Wait, hold on, Reggae Jean Page. I don't know that he hangs dong at any point during any of the episodes. Like, I don't remember seeing that. But like, you
there's
saw
a lot of
everything.
Butt. There's a lot of butt.
You saw it. There's not, there's thrusting like, and there's fast movements with hands, and then there's things under things, and then there's like used handkerchiefs, and it's just like it pushes it pretty far. I mean, there is a point where like it's pushing it. Like if you watch the 50 Shades films,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
probably pushes it even farther than some of those scenes. And so it is a little like,
wow.
Like,
ooh, scandalous.
I went to have a video call with someone and I came back and Mackenzie's like blushing, sitting on the couch. She's like, I had to turn it off. There was like too much going on and I just had to pause for a second. So
why did she have to pause?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know what she
was. She
said.
Was too flustered. She had the vapors. She had to leave.
I got the vapors.
But like I said, it's not like that until episode 5. It's like someone turned on the faucet. Like, everything's normal.
Is that what you call it, Patrick? Turning on the faucet?
Episode 3 or episode 4, they have like a little 3-minute conversation about like how to touch yourself. Uh-huh. And
oh my gosh.
And
Patrick learned some things.
Yeah, I didn't. I was taking notes the whole time. I got like a notebook full. And then they take a break for 2 episodes, and then they just turn on the faucet, and it's like straight like softcore porn.
Dang.
And they do that for a couple episodes. Really bizarre. So here's the thing. It was such a weird tone for me. Like, the reviews for the show have been great. It's got 92% on Rotten Tomatoes. Critically, it seems to be very well liked. It's the 5th highest viewed or downloaded, whatever the term is, for Netflix. It's their 5th highest for their original series. It's doing very, very well. And I did like lots of aspects of it. It is very pretty. There is a lot of eye candy. Learning the people and kind of the interactions are fun. And it's cast fairly well, although in several cases with the castings, you can kind of tell who they would have cast if they had a little bit more money, but they didn't. But it's still cast pretty well, and the performances are compelling enough. But something about this mismatch of literally, like, we're watching one show for 4 episodes, and then the show changes for a couple of episodes, and then it switches back. It was just very odd for me. Like, I'm not a prude by any stretch. Again, what did I say earlier that they call me? Like, Mr. Big Spreader
the starfish.
Or something?
Yeah. So, Super Shredder.
Wasn't he in the Turtles?
Yeah. Super Spreader. Sorry.
Super Spreader.
Do you realize that was the reference that I made earlier when I said he's a super spreader? Okay.
No, I did not.
Okay. I was hoping that was picked up on.
Thank
apparently
you.
Apparently, I picked up on it for myself.
No, it's good. I'm not a prude, but I do think that for me, it crossed a line where it ceased to make sense within the scope of like telling the story. Like, we did things we didn't need to do if our goal was like just communicating the next beat of the story.
Sure. You don't need to have butt stuff, is what you're saying.
Yeah, what I'm saying is like...
or long explanations.
Seeing 2 people have sex is fine. Once we've just spent the last 20 minutes doing it, it's just like, okay, I fully understand.
I got the point.
Like, I totally get it, you know. And because it does kind of switch to a bit of the like, oh, like I'm supposed to... like. You get the sense that it turns into one of those like steamy romance novels.
Right,
like it's trying to hit that demographic for a second.
Right. You're supposed to be doing something alongside them. like it's intended for that. Like, it's intended to titillate you and give you enough time to reach completion.
I mean,
that's crazy because, like, I watched the trailer for this because, like, I've been hearing a lot about it, like, in general. They were, like, word of mouth and other podcasts and stuff, and I was just curious what it was. And then I watched the trailer, and it seems very, like, Lifetime movie level, very kind of sterile. Like, they might only just, like, imply that stuff. To find out the show is, like, this horny is very funny to me.
It's not just word of mouth. It's word of mouth, word of hand, word of butt. Like, they do all of the things.
No, but I'll agree with you. I was 4 episodes in... and then again, it's episode 5 is when the switch happens. I wasn't expecting it. And I've just seen half the series and it caught me off guard. Like, that's how sudden it is. And that's how quickly they turn it up. And I agree. Like, it hits a point of like, oh, like I think you just said it was like meant to titillate. Like, that's the point that it hits of like, oh, we're no longer like telling the story. We're supposed to go like, I guess enjoy this detour for a bit, and then we'll get back to it.
We're supposed to finish with them and then continue the show.
This sounds like dirtier even than like Game of Thrones, which like had a lot of like sex position scenes, but I felt like it was always something else going on at the same time.
Again, like I don't remember if there was full like ween, but like there might
have
been.
That's what the Witcher's for.
There might have been, but you could like for sure probably like glimpse some sack or something. Like it's like.
That's like a hilarious
pause
term.
And like frame by frame, like there's some stuff in there for sure. It's just it all happens so quickly.
Might get a glimpse of a ball.
Andrew, you would recognize Nicola Coughlin is in this show. She is the short blonde girl from Dairy Girls. Oh. And we talked a bit about like, is the acting like overacting or right. is it like yeah. this? She's totally different.
So she is overacting in that show or she's directed to be that way.
Yeah. Like the point is,
it's she intentional.
Is for sure a different character. It actually took me, I had to ultimately Google it to verify it was the girl from Dairy Girls because it's such a different performance.
I had to keep going back and rewatching scene after scene after scene to just see who it was.
She doesn't have any of
this is what you've been doing while you live alone again.
Anyway, so Bridgerton. I did guess there is a fun game of guess who Lady Whistledown is because you don't know who's writing the gossip column. And they finally tell you in like the last 3 minutes of the last episode.
Awesome.
I guessed it at like episode 4. So
don't say anything else because I want to.
That's what I'm saying. So this is a fun game. Can you guess Lady Whistledown by the end? All right. Can you spot the sack? And otherwise, just like enjoy the show. But there are some fun bits, and it is
spot
cool,
the
like,
sack
seeing...
and whistle blow whistle down. That's the, those will be the two.
Seeing everybody dressed up and then like hearing some modern song but played by an orchestra, it's fun and like the characters. But I mean, it does
sound really fun. You have like sold me on this because at first I was like zero interest because I'm like, this looks like a Lifetime movie that
I'd like to
is, like trying to be the great or something.
Since you've already seen it, Patrick, you can't play, but I'd like to for Lauren and I. I would like to, by episode three, mm-hmm. we have to put our guess for who Whistledown is. By episode three, we have to put it in somewhere in writing, and then we will see.
I'll put it in a sealed envelope.
Yes.
Mail it to you.
Yes. Let me make sure that I said the right episode.
Because I like making a game out of this. I like seeing if we can, because Patrick says he guessed it in the
first
3 minutes.
Oh, I love this stuff.
So I want to make sure that we can have the same because by episode
I'm totally
it wasn't four. I think it was episode 5 that I guessed it. So you need to guess it by the end of episode 5.
Okay, by episode 5. Okay. So by mid-season we have to have made our guess and put it in an envelope and then at the end of it we will reveal them and see if we were right or not.
Yeah, let's do it.
I think that'll be fun. Okay.
For sure.
All right. You've got us.
But that's it. That's Bridgerton. I mean, I'm not going to watch it again. It's whatever. I think it's a pretty big C for me and my watching habits. Here's what I'm saying. You know, like, we can spend less time on the sex and let's really pump up the drama. Or let's have a lot harder
cut
sex.
Out the cut out the drama.
Just go one way or the other. Make up the line. Pick a lane.
None of this like toe in this middle line.
Yeah.
Let's go one or the other out of it.
Yeah. Jump both feet into either camp and just go for it. Be Succession or be Real Confessions of a Call Girl. Just be one or the other. Don't ride that line down the center.
Down the center. That was actually one of my favorite movies. Anyway, so Bridgerton, here's the thing. If you like the idea of Riverdale plus Emma, you'll like this show. That's the best way I know how to describe it. So then go watch it. For me, it's a C, but not to say some people won't love it. Mackenzie really enjoyed it. So that's Bridgerton.
Yeah, she kept pausing it. All right. So I think that's going to be it for this episode. But because we are jumping back into our format of picking our categories, we're going to roll some dice. And so prior to the record, we put down our list of all the different categories. And those could be, Lauren, why don't you read off what the list is in no particular order? Give people what the idea of all the different variations of what's out there.
For sure. We have our old categories, of course. So TV and film, toys and games, art and design. But we also added things like business, food, books, music, tech, We're going to do one category where it's Slack's choice. So we're going to put it up in Slack, and whatever anybody suggests is the first thing. We will talk about that. And then we got a couple of random ones too.
Yeah. And the deal would be if someone gets Slack choice, we will put it in Slack right then while we're recording. And if somebody answers the call immediately, we will say whatever it is on air. Otherwise, it's the first person to respond in Slack. They get to choose what our topic is.
And the D4 modifier. So we're going to roll a D20 to pick the category. And a nat 1 or a nat 20 means that we get to choose. That's what calculated randomness.
Yes.
2 through 19, we're going to go with the choice that is on the key that Lauren has. And then the D4 we're going to roll is going to determine if that category, if we have to talk about that category, either past, present, future, or our choice. Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So that's the modifier. All right.
That's how we're going for it. So, and the list will change from week to week. Not what's on the list, but the list will be randomized every week. So we don't know what we're rolling for. We can't
prevents us from going out buying weighted die.
Right. We can't stack the deck. This thing is going to be super randomized, and so I'm really excited for it. So Patrick, why don't you kick us off with our roll?
I'll roll first. So for my D20, I rolled a 15.
All righty. You have TV.
Wow. Look at you.
Well, I just did it. Blew Special. My... that's Bridgerton.
You blew your Bridgerton.
And I rolled a 4 on the D4.
So that is your choice.
Yeah.
Perfect. Choice. So TV, my choice.
Okay. All right. Lauren, why don't you go and then I'll finish this out.
I got an 11, which will be music. One of the ones I did not want.
Perfect. Perfect.
I literally said before this, don't want music, don't want business.
I said the same thing.
And then I got a 4 also, so that is whatever time I want.
Okay. Lauren, you still have a saving grace because there is a caveat to all of this. If I also roll the same as one of them, we both have to re-roll because then no one gets it. So that's the idea. So, all right, I'm rolling this thing out. I rolled a 2.
That is art.
Okay. Look at this. Oh. We all got what we wanted.
Except me.
All right. I'm going to roll my modifier real quick. And it's a 3. So I have to talk about something in the future.
Yes.
As it pertains to art. Okay. Cool. Mm-hmm. Guys, I'm excited about this new format. It's a return to the old cool. with a twist. With a twist that makes it fun and fresh. So we'll see how this goes next week. But I think for now, we're going to call this episode done. You can find all of the show notes about this episode over at mofone.network. There's a whole slew of other things while you're there. If you are a content creator or you want to be a content creator on our platform, there will be a short form on our website as well. So hit up mofone.network and fill that out. We're really excited about that. We have some cool plans and some cool ideas for 2021. Maybe next week we'll give you more details about that new streaming live draw thing that Patrick was talking about and be able to tell you who's hosting that and what the plan is with all that. So maybe stay tuned for next week to hear all that info. But really, we're jazzed. 2021, I think, is going to be much more of a return to the community and making this even more for you and bringing you part of this and just really trying to expand this into something that we believe in, because it's really what it's all been about from the very beginning. So I think with that, you can find us on M of One Podcast and all the different social platforms. You can contribute on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/M of One Podcast. Our patrons, thank you, because starting 2021 off, Lauren is getting a new microphone, and you'll be able to hear her in crystal clear audio here in the next couple of weeks.
My laugh will be even louder.
And that's, and that's all because of you guys. So thank you so much. If you haven't already, like, rate, review, subscribe to the podcast on all the different platforms there as well. You can find me at Andrew Sale with 3s instead of E's if you want to see a bunch of drawings of Disney characters.
I am at Not Cool Co. pretty much everywhere if you want to see drawings of different pop culture stuff.
And I'm at Squatchin. Squatchin. Squatchin.
No drawing.
You don't want to tell people what you'll see drawings of?
I mean, I know this, of other people's work that I pay money to.
Perfect. We're going to hop out of this episode, though. Until next week, I'm Andrew.
I'm Lauren.
I'm Patrick.
Peace.
Adios.
Bye.